If you're haunted and harassed by your own inner critic, if you've ever been curious about why hypnosis works so well, if you're a seasoned hypnotist, or if you suspect that the inner critic is actually hypnotizing you to hold back from reaching the greatness that you know deep down is inside you, lean in and get inspired to get out of your comfort zone and create your one precious life with purpose and intention. If you like this show, you'll love my powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, because it gives you crystal clear guidance and direction and illuminates an ingenious way to make triumphant decisions, no matter how stuck you feel or how confused you were. This powerful hypnosis audio is my gift to you when you go to theimpostermonster.com. Again, that's theimpostermonster.com. Don't forget the. Theimpostermonster.com. And yes, I'm done saying it. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'm Lori Hammond, and I'm truly grateful for you.
Welcome, everyone. I am so grateful for today's guest. She was nominated Hypnotist of the Year in 2019. Kaz Riley is an award-winning, leading inspirational hypnotist, hypnotherapist, and hypnosis educator. She is recognized as a leading expert in the fields of sexual freedom, sexual dysfunction, and kink-friendly hypnotherapy. She has an excellent international reputation for both her work with clients and her specialist training and mentoring programs for hypnotherapists. Kaz is the founder and creator of Sexual Freedom Hypnosis, which is now taught across the world. When I reached out to Kaz, one of the things that she wrote was, I would love to talk about why feeling good about ourselves sexually and losing the shame positively impacts every aspect of life. And I am so excited to have you here today, Kaz. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be here.
Will you just talk to me a little bit about, give me a foundation of what you do, maybe why you do it, what brought you to this work? I would love to hear your story.
Well, it's kind of multi-layered, and like any great kind of niche, if you like, it found me. And really what was happening was I was working with, in the field of fertility hypnosis, actually, I was working very closely with one of my mentors, Lindsay Eastburn. And what happened was all these clients were walking through into my office, all kind of having fertility issues or having IVF. And actually it turned out that a lot of them had got sexual issues. They kind of got sexual dysfunction, or they were kind of past their fertility treatment and they were feeling, especially the women, very unfemale, like they were broken, that something was wrong with them, that they couldn't function. You know, they kind of, the words that they would say to me is, I don't feel like a woman, which is a huge and massive thing. So kind of the clients came to me, and then really there wasn't an awful lot out there for kind of working with hypnosis and sexuality, and also kind of working with hypnosis and sex. So there's been a lot of research, there's been a lot of trial and error, there's been a kind of a lot of experimental hypnosis, and this is the result of that nearly 20 years later. So it's a passion, it's something I feel truly passionate about. I do truly believe that everybody has the right to be sexual, to enjoy a good and fulfilling sexual life, whatever that means for them, and really for us to lose this shame and this guilt that's this kind of prickly blanket that surrounds sexual things, and for us to get rid of that and embrace it and allow us to experience that through our lives.
Do you meet resistance sometimes when women come in and maybe talk about the not feeling like a woman, not feeling feminine, and you raise this idea for them? Do you sometimes experience resistance?
It's more curiosity, actually. Okay. There's some resistance, because I think that kind of long-term kind of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of kind of social conditioning about how women should view sex, we should feel about sex, what sex is for even. And they're kind of curious that I might kind of suggest to them that actually our kind of sexual force, our libido, our life force, as I kind of reframe and call it, is something that's actually completely essential to living a kind of fulfilling life, a wholehearted life. Because if we push away our sexuality, then with that goes our sensuality, our eroticism, the way, you know, the way we experience the world. And if we shut down one thing, then we've got no choice really than to shut down lots of other things. So by being open, you know, I think once they realize, I'm not saying to them we should go around being sexual, but if we embrace our sexuality, then we move through the world in a much more confident and kind of sensual way. We experience the world, you know, it's right back to mindfulness, isn't it? You know, we're right there in it.
Could you walk me through that distinction that you just said? It's not really just about being sexual, it's about showing up in the world in a more sensual way, to help me help my brain, because I'm definitely in that space of curiosity.
Okay. If I may, I'm actually writing a book at the moment, and I've actually kind of tried to define this because it's quite a difficult thing to define. So this is my definition. I've not shared this with anybody, so you're the first person that I'm sharing this with. And it's kind of about our kind of sexual pleasure and sexuality. But it says a sexual pleasure and sexuality are not necessarily about the act of having sex. It's about finding your ever shimmering erotic and sensual energy, letting it pulse through you in your daily life, that energy becoming part of everything you do, so that you become enchanted by the possibility of simply being yourself, a woman.
Wow. I'm going to go back and transcribe that, or you should send me that paragraph. Oh. It's like you're a hypnotist or something. You have this beautiful way with words. I love that definition. Thank you so much. When a woman steps into that, how does that start to transform her life? What are the side effects of a woman embracing that viewpoint?
Well, she sees herself very differently. You know, she starts to view herself in a very different way. And with that, it's kind of like a decloaking, if you like. So if you imagine that the kind of the world and society, and this isn't about, you know, kind of the views of men hold these views too. They're taught the same things that we are taught. So, you know, just to be kind of very clear about that, where, you know, we start to kind of lift away that cloak that cloak holds so many things. So shame is one, you know, should I have sexual thoughts? Should I have sexual feelings? Are these fantasies okay to even have? Things like, how do I feel when I experience sexual pleasure? You know, how should I act when I experience sexual pleasure? You know, this is something I see a lot of women that feel they almost kind of perform their sexuality. As I move through life, is it okay to notice how amazing this jumper feels on my skin? And actually, yes, it is. You know, is it good to kind of breathe in, you know, and feel my own power and energy? You know, they start to see that their libido, their life force, actually motivates them in their jobs, in their careers, in their ambitions, in just kind of how they communicate with other people. And with that comes this amazing feeling of self-esteem, self-acceptance, self-confidence that allows them to step out into the world as a woman and to kind of own that energy. So that they just have this real vibrancy about them. It's kind of colorfulness within. It's a really beautiful thing to see, you know, people coming in from the clinic, you know, they're like this at the start, and they can't even talk about their own genitals. They can't even, you know, these are women sometimes that are CEOs of companies. They'll go and give huge presentations to people. They own their own businesses, and yet they can't, you know, they're so disconnected from all this amazing energy that they hold within themselves that they can't say the word vulva or vagina or whatever it is that they call their private parts. You know, it's this kind of amazing. It's just watching them kind of get rid of all this stuff, kind of throw it off. It's so cool.
That is so incredible. As I'm listening, I'm thinking some of my own what ifs, and perhaps my audience's what ifs. If a woman is coming from a background of shame or perhaps even past abuse or even just fear sexually, this uncloaking that you're speaking of, does that put, I know your answer, but I just want to play devil's advocate. Does that put them in a more vulnerable place where perhaps they're going to be getting attention that they've been trying to protect themselves from by being invisible and by being in denial of their genitals and their sexuality and their libido?
It's a really interesting question, and it's a really valid one. But actually what happens is they make themselves less vulnerable because they're owning that power. They're not going out being more sexual in life. It's an internal thing. It's a sensual thing. It's about how they feel. And if we embrace that, if we understand that about ourselves, whatever that means for us, then we understand our boundaries better. We're able to understand what's good consent for us better. And rather than trying to navigate how we think we should feel or behave, we know how we feel or should behave. And therefore we know what our boundaries are. And if we know them, then obviously they're much stronger and it's much harder for somebody to kind of violate them. So, and that's in any sense of our lives. That could be as simply as saying, no, or I don't want to do that. It's not even necessarily a sexual thing. That could just be in our day-to-day lives where, you know, if we know what our boundaries are, we're just kind of much more sure about ourselves. And I think that's kind of the real kind of important thing from that.
I love this. Now, I don't want to ask you any proprietary secrets or things that you do in your session, but if you are happy to walk us through perhaps how a person would go about setting those boundaries, I would absolutely love it.
Okay, well, it's something that I teach a lot, and there's actually quite a few videos of me doing work with boundaries on my YouTube channel. So I'll send you some links so you can attach that to this if you would that.
Yes.
But really, it's understanding about the things that we can influence, we can control, that we can have ownership of, and also the things that we can't. And often everybody, men and women, spend so much time, it's the what if, isn't it? You know, what if this happens? What if that happens? And it's fear. So it's learning to have that really amazing boundary. So the way that I do that is I kind of explain it as we have our physical boundary, we have our skin. Our skin defines, you know, the inside of us, the non-us and the us, if you like. And in the same way, we have this kind of psychological sensual boundary that we too, you know, defines us. We need to know where that boundary is. And I use a lot of visualization and guided meditation for them to kind of create that boundary so that they can see what it looks like for them. And it comes out as sometimes it's a wall, sometimes it's a dome. Mine's this kind of sparkly force field that's purple and, you know, things bounce off it and all that kind of stuff. And the idea is that we can, it's fluid, we can move things in and out of it. We can temporarily move things in and then move things out of it. But it's knowing that everything inside that boundary, we can have some influence, we can control, we can change in some way. And within there are our yeses and our noes. You know, what we say yes to, what we say no to, what we want to experience, what we don't want to experience, what's acceptable to us, what's not acceptable to us. Our self-respect, our self-esteem, all of those things are inside that boundary. And when we think of it as being inside that boundary, it also becomes protected and we self-protect it. So, and then anything, you know, we all get that thing, don't we, that flies into our head. Am I good enough is the question. Am I womanly enough? Is it okay for me to feel this way? And actually, if we allow ourselves to view that within the protection of our boundary, we can answer the question and then we can decide actually yes or no. And then we can move all these what ifs and maybes outside of our boundary again.
Thank you so much for explaining that. I feel like my boundary is very similar to yours. I always have sparkles, and for me, it's even an auditory experience. Like I can hear the sparkles. I love that underneath what you're explaining, I hear this beautiful self-love and self-respect underneath, which makes it so apparent why this would be a protective thing to have that will keep you more safe instead of more vulnerable. How would you talk to a woman or even a man who has that deep shame from the past? I know I was raised in an incredibly strict legalistic religion that taught that sex equals going to hell if it's not done in a very specific way. So if someone who has been essentially brainwashed or hypnotized to have this shameful view of sexuality, how would you guide them to step outside of that?
Well, when somebody arrives in my office that's experienced that level of shame or guilt, and you know, the two are very interlinked, they're different things, but they're very interlinked. The first thing I do is affectionately call it shilt, which immediately starts to disempower it, because you know, it just sounds a much more kind of comedic way. It's that get rid of that shilt is much more powerful than I'm experiencing all this shame and guilt. But what I do with that is obviously the person that's in my office understands that the views that they have and the shame that they feel is actually misplaced. You know, they have that understanding. So we're always working within people's religions and their boundaries. You know, it's about what this means to them. It's not like a universal thing of what sexual freedom is. And really where I start with that is kind of looking at where those beliefs come from. So I'm a big fan of what I call healing the younger self, which is a version of the inner child, but people freak out. As soon as we say the word child and sex, they get a bit kind of, so we just call it the younger self because it's just much more agreeable and easy. And then we look at, you know, what actually that person believes now or they want to believe. And we start to kind of tie those beliefs in together. And the way that I do that is by actually connecting them with their future self, the one that doesn't have all of this stuff anymore. So they've stepped into that power. They know what that might feel like, what that could be for them. And then we use that as a resource state to take their present self and their younger self, or younger selves, often there's quite a few, and kind of start to reframe all of that and to kind of work through all of that. And it's probably worth kind of mentioning that our sexual shame often, not always, but often starts way before we're sexual beings, you know, when we're little children. And often when I explain to people that, you know, our bodies are built for pleasure, you know, we're not talking about pleasure in this hedonistic way. We're talking about it in this very sensual way where we experience the world through all of our senses. Every single one of us, men and women, are built that way. And it's often about the reaction of adults that hold guilt and shame to those children, or when we're children, that we learn those behaviors. So if we can forgive the people perhaps that taught us these things or shamed us, then, and also as we kind of relearn that actually all of this is normal and natural, that, you know, we go through life with all of our senses for a reason, they start to let go of all that shame and guilt. And, you know, it's kind of a, rather than kind of saying thinking like that is wrong, it's kind of explaining why that we don't have to think like that and we don't need to.
Beautiful. You mentioned forgiveness. Do you have any ways to help guide a person who might need to forgive? How do you equip people to do that?
There's many ways. I mean, it really depends what they feel they need to be forgiven for or to forgive themselves for. And that sometimes actually is just kind of like a pattern interrupt. So I had a lady, I have lots of ladies actually that feel this way, where they'll say, you know, I was brought up in this very restrictive kind of environment. I went off to college or university. I threw caution to the wind and I was very promiscuous. You know, this is something that I hear a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say, okay, so what? And they go, but I was very promiscuous. And I'll go, okay, so what? And but I did this thing, so what? And then you could see the realization. Sometimes it's just something like that. Well, so what if I did? We all have a past. We are the accumulation of our past experiences. Mm-hmm. And many of those experiences will actually feed very positively into the future. You know, it's just about a belief. You know, it's about the way. And I'll say, you know, I often say to them, would somebody say that to a man? And they go, no. Are we equal to men? Yes. So what? And then I'll just get them to say, so what? You know, and that's just one of the ways. Other ways are, you know, just kind of really going into that kind of feminine space and kind of allowing themselves to forgive themselves about how they may have kind of not respected their own body. And I mean with their thoughts, not necessarily about the things that they've physically done, you know, where they've kind of been very critical of it or not loving towards it. So there's so many different ways, but they're probably two of the key ways that we can start to deal with some of that.
That's beautiful. And I love the simplicity of it so much. I think of these heavy feelings that we carry around in our body just have to do with the story we're telling ourselves about them. And that simple, so what, like, just, I can almost feel that story energetically crumbling just hearing you say that. What about a person who needs to offer forgiveness to someone that has wronged them in the past, whether it was indoctrinating them with shame or perhaps abusing them in some way?
Okay. I think, again, if it's somebody that's kind of indoctrinated them with shame, it's about that act of they were simply doing the best they could at the time. They were acting on their own beliefs. And that's a very powerful thing, isn't it? If we kind of recognize that our parents, you know, our teachers, our religious educators, or whoever it might be, are simply doing the best that they can with the beliefs that they hold at the time. And we don't necessarily have to subscribe to those beliefs anymore. And, you know, we can kind of move away from that. On the flip side of that, where you've got somebody that has been abused, and in this case, of course, we're often talking about sexual abuse. I think that's the... And what I do with that, with a lot of people, is help them to kind of move away from, or to kind of separate, is probably a better word, sex from power. And to help them understand, because sometimes, you know, I'll see people, I think a recent client that pops into my mind recently, actually, somebody who at the time she wasn't bothered by the abuse. She kind of enjoyed it. She realized later, and I'm not saying that people enjoy being abused, she just didn't realize that what it was. She didn't realize what happened to her. It was kind of later in hindsight where she was kind of looking back at what had happened to her. And then the shame was there, really, because I should have realized. But, you know, when I explain to people that, you know, we as children or young adults, even, you know, abuse can happen at any age. It's not necessarily just about children, is that, you know, we can view it from very, very different angles at different points in our lifetime. And it's about us letting go of the shame. We don't necessarily have to forgive the person that did it, you know, but we can kind of move away from what that means for us in our personal lives and our future lives and our sensual lives. Sometimes it's good to forgive, but sometimes people don't want to, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're hating somebody. And, you know, I often explain to my clients, we can have indifference to some people from our past. And that doesn't mean we have to bring them into our hearts, but it also means that we don't have to hate them. And if we're indifferent to something, generally that means it doesn't bother us anymore.
I've noticed that, and this is from a lesson I learned far in my past, I think that hate and love are really closely interlinked. And I think that the opposite of hate is not love, but it is, or the opposite of love is indifference. The opposite of hate probably is indifference. Will you just say a little bit more about that? Because I think this is an important distinction. And if I may, how a person can achieve that indifference without forgiveness?
Okay. I think it's, you know, that indifference is... I guess if you look at how we might work with some trauma, I think this is probably a good example. And we've got somebody that's maybe got a PTSD type thing going on, which again, within my work, I see a lot. And for them, it's about their memory. It's about their version of events. It's about how it made them feel. It's about the emotions that's attached to it. And understandably, those emotions also are attached to the person that abused them. So by taking away the emotion, so when we think about if we can get them to the point where they can look at what happened to them and it doesn't have this kind of masses of emotion, they become indifferent to it. So they certainly don't like what happened to them. And I think this is the distinction between hating and liking. They become indifferent to those memories, that we kind of seep out that emotion. then they become indifferent to that person. So they don't necessarily hate or love that person. They're just a person. And what that does, of course, is the person that was abused, it empowers them because it takes away the power that that person had over them at some point, whilst not feeling that they should, you know, that they've been put under pressure to forgive them. They've just become indifferent to them. And sometimes, you know, we talk about forgiveness and I work a lot with forgiveness and, you know, it's a very useful thing, but actually sometimes to own your own power, it's not necessarily about being forgiving. It's about being indifferent to something. And I think that's kind of, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
It does. And this is really helpful for me because I often tell people that the act of forgiveness is something that you're doing for yourself, not for the other person. So I'm genuinely intrigued by this perspective. I'm not bringing this up to argue. I'm bringing this up to really understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I think the idea of someone being able to achieve healing without that forgiveness is kind of a cool idea. So if it's okay, if I just dig a little bit deeper,
Do
you feel that forgiveness is, it doesn't sound like you feel like it's necessary, but you feel like it's advantageous. And do you think once a person has cleared that trauma in a way that lets them feel indifference, that it then opens them up to forgiveness?
I think it does because we forgive somebody for ourselves and we work through, when we think about if we come to therapy, we do that for ourselves usually, don't we? You know, we may be motivated by the people around us, but ultimately we have to do that for ourselves. So when we have, and we can get to that point of indifference, I guess what we're doing is we're kind of, it's not that we have to forgive them. It depends what it's about, really, isn't it? There are some things in life that are unforgivable. You know, there are some things that can happen to us. And I think in a way to tell somebody that they have to forgive the person that did something to them, that actually still gives that person a lot of power, the kind of the abuser a lot of power. Where if we tell the person that experienced the abuse that they can become indifferent to that person, then actually we're giving the power back to the person that was abused without this pressure that they should feel a particular way. Indifference is really not feeling very much. And sometimes there are things in life we do actually need to feel not very much about, because if we do that, then we open ourselves up to feeling more about other things, about good things, about the things that we need to feel to help us to move through our daily life. And just as we talk about not shoving down bad feelings, if you like, you know, we need to embrace them. If we can't forgive somebody, if we can't find that place where, because something unforgivable happened to us, then we have to push that down too, which also means we have to push down everything else. So sometimes I think the word forgiveness, powerful, wonderful, beautiful, and we don't want to be indifferent to ourselves. You know, we're talking about forgiving ourselves for things is a very different thing. Talking about somebody that did something really terrible to us, part of our healing sometimes might be forgiveness, but indifference is just as good. And, you know, I try not to put pressure on my clients that they should feel or should behave in a particular way or should think about a person that did them great harm with forgiveness, when actually indifference will serve my client just as well.
This is such an awesome reframe for me. I am learning so much from you right now, and I'm so grateful for you diving in a little bit deeper and explaining that, because I feel like this is going to transform the way I work with people and with myself. I have a person from my past that I have struggled to forgive for decades. And it's like, I've chosen to forgive. I have the desire to forgive, but it's just like, I don't.
Yeah.
So this is really awesome, Kaz. I'm so grateful. In a moment, I would love to dive in, because this is you and I, this is our first time interacting with one another, and I'm having such a blast. I'm so grateful for this connection. We had said before we started the recording that we've both been on each other's radars, and I think we have both respect for one another, but I see this confidence in you and this beautiful, just putting yourself out there into the world in a meaningful way. And I would love to dive in and talk about that just in the context of helping people silence their imposter monster. But before we go there, is there anything that I haven't asked or anything that's on your heart to share in the context of helping people just feel good about themselves sexually and losing that shame so that it can positively impact every area of their life?
Okay. I think really, and this is what I tell my clients, is that our sexual pleasure, our sensuality, our eroticism, you know, all these amazing things that are very human traits, you know, this kind of the having sex just for the sheer pleasure of having sex, or enjoying our sensual selves, you know, completely alone, you know, however we may choose to do that, is normal. It's a natural part of being a human, and especially of being a woman. And, you know, our bodies are built for that, and the connections that we have with our mind are built for that. And, you know, really that's kind of what I want to say about that, is that if you're in a place, you're thinking, I shouldn't be feeling like this, or what's wrong with me, or all of those kinds of things, is just remember that being sexual and our libido, our life force, is made up of so many things that, you know, it's quite essential to who we are. So allow yourself to, or give yourself permission to be the kind of sexual being that you want to be.
Thank you so much. So changing gears a little bit, as soon as you and I got on camera together, I thought, this woman is so confident. And I even picked up on that reading the bio that you sent in and the way you answered the questions that I send out to potential podcast guests. And I also know from conversations that we have that you are quite busy with clients, that you are booked up, that you are walking the walk. And so I would love to hear a little bit about your journey from just starting out in the hypnosis industry and building your business to a place where you are confident, you are booked, you are making a difference in people's lives. What has that journey been like for you?
Well, it's been an interesting one. And, you know, there's been some real highs and a few lows along the way. I've had two children during that time as well. So that, you know, changes things according to how old they are and whether or not you're pregnant and all that kind of stuff. But my hypnosis journey started when I was very young. And believe it or not, it was Scooby-Doo that got me into hypnosis. It was the episode with the clown, and I was just quite fascinated by that. But I realized that, you know, my life has been quite a hypnotic one. The first time I ever hypnotized anybody was actually my sister. I didn't know that's what I was doing at the time. I was just giving her suggestions. We used to share a bedroom. She used to get frightened. And we weren't allowed to kind of climb in bed with each other. So I tied a scarf to one end of my bed and tied the other scarf to the other end of mine. And then just told her that all the bad feelings and all the scared feelings would just come and be in my bed and I'd look after her. And she reminded me of this quite recently. I was like, actually, that's probably the first time I ever hypnotized anybody. I was completely clueless that I had. But fast forward through kind of university, and it was when I got to university that I discovered hypnosis. And that's because I didn't used to be a confident person. I used to be an extraordinarily anxious person. In fact, my therapist told me I was the most anxious teen he'd ever met. And, you know, that, so my journey started really, as many, many hypnotists and therapists' journey started, was actually by being the client. And I came out the other side of that, a very different person. And, you know, kind of, and went actually and worked for the dark side. I worked for the dark side. I was in medical sales for a long time. But all of that's been part of my journey. You know, the medications that I was selling are all completely relevant to what I do now and the speciality I do now, including launching Viagra in the UK, which, you know, if you'd have told me then I'd be doing this now, I would never would have believed you in a million years. But when I started my practice, I went and did my training, started my practice. And the real turning point for me was a couple of years after that, which was when my eldest son was born. And at the time, I was traveling a lot. I was away from home 2 or 3 nights a week. And I didn't want that for my family at that point. I can do that now. They're both, you know, in their late teens, but I couldn't do that then. And I made a decision to leave this very well-paid job with all the perks, the car and the healthcare and all that kind of stuff, and to focus on what then was quite a sideline business. So for me, I had to make it work. I had to make it work because we need money to live. You know, there's no, you know, and at the time, you know, and still is actually, my salary, my partner's salary, my husband's salary were equally important, because I hear sometimes a lot of women get told, oh, well, you know, you've got a husband that earns loads, you know, you can just play at hypnosis. And for many women, that is not the case. You know, we are just as where we need to be and independent with our kind of own financial security. What then transpired was I just kind of moved on and powered through and used all the techniques that I'd learned, networking, you know, people by people. I know that, you know, I'm kind of unashamedly myself, you know, what you see is what you get. And I think that's really propelled me forward and ended up working within this niche. And it wasn't until 6 years ago where, on a complete whim, you know, what the universe tells us to do something. And I have found myself on a 24-hour journey that went via Switzerland to get to Las Vegas to go and attend the HypnoThoughts convention, where I met my tribe, basically. I met all these people. I'd been literally in my office seeing lots of clients, completely unaware actually that people struggled quite often to have full-time hypnosis businesses. I just assumed that was the same for everybody because I built it and I hadn't really questioned. And I think that's kind of key. It never occurred to me that I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't be able to build that. And I think that's a powerful thing, isn't it? What we believe. Yeah. And people were asking me what I did, and I was telling them, and they were like, you should tell us this. You should come and teach this next year. And I'm thinking, why would anybody want to listen to me? You know, why would they want to do that? And I was kind of nervous about that. And that's kind of where my second bout of imposter syndrome kind of kicked in, where I was thinking, I can't go across the world and go and teach what I do in my little office here in Huddersfield in Yorkshire in the north of England. This is just what I do. And on the way back, I was actually sat in, I think it was Philadelphia Airport, on my phone. I'd got this ridiculously long way over, and I came across Brené Brown's talk on shame and vulnerability. And I was kind of like, here I am telling all these women, especially women, that they need to kind of live wholeheartedly. They need to cast off their shame. And here I am. Wondering what other people might think if I go and talk openly about the work that I do in my office every day with all of these amazing women. And I realized if I didn't do that, if I didn't kind of step out of that zone and step into that kind of educator role and to actually speak much more loudly about the truth that we have about this, you know, and to speak my truth about that, that I was doing a real disservice. I wasn't walking my talk. So I made a very conscious decision that that's what I would do. And I applied to go back to HypnoThoughts the next year. They gave me a lecture. They gave me a post-con. And I have never looked back.
Wow, that is incredible. I want to spotlight a few things that you said. And if you want to dive in a little deeper on any of these, feel free. Sure. I was typing notes over on the side as you were speaking. One thing you said is that people buy people. And I tell people all the time, it's all about building rapport. You have to build rapport first. You know, that's why it doesn't matter if you have like these pretty flowery, wordy ads. It's about you. And then you mentioned that you did this on a complete whim, that you came out to HypnoThoughts. I think you might have even said you felt almost like it was an inspired decision. And I've noticed that often those are the ones that just skyrocket my business. It's when we get out of our own head and we stop like trying to micromanage our life and try to figure out the how, and we just let ourselves get a little playful. And then the final thing that I wanted to spotlight is how you said it never occurred to you that you couldn't. So if you want to dive a little deeper on any of those, I would love to hear.
We can do all three. Remind me of the first. My dyslexic brain is
people
still
processing. People buy people. I know.
All out there at once. Okay, so people buy people. This is something actually that I learned way back when I was in sales. And probably the kind of the what's the rebellious youngster that resides inside of me and still does. Well, we were kind of told we have to be a particular way. And there are obviously in business, there's ways that we have to be a particular way. But what I did was I just did it my way. So I would go in and I would speak to the doctors and I would, you know, kind of make friends with the secretaries. And, you know, I am a person that believes that we should go out and compliment people, not disingenuously, but, you know, if we think somebody looks good, I tell them, you know, it's as simple as that. If I think somebody's done a great thing or I'm really grateful for something, I just tell them. And by doing that, I think, you know, we build rapport, and rapport is something that we build by simply being ourselves. And then we build a connection, you know, rapport is connection. And I think often, especially as hypnotists, we talk about building rapport. It seems like this kind of thing that has like, I don't know, the five steps to building great rapport.
Formulate.
There may be that, but yeah. Ultimately it's just about being open and honest and who we are and doing that unashamedly, you know, like this is who I am. And when we do that, we kind of see the other person as who they are. And then that's where the connection comes from. So that's, you know, I talk about people by people. You can have all the fancy words, you can have the super whizzy website, all of that stuff helps. But ultimately what has to shine through with that is you, you know, is your personality, your ethos, how you do things. And to do, and then the people that resonate and connect with that will be the people that find you. And then of course everything else just moves on absolutely marvelously after that, doesn't it?
I love it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with really doing that with intention. I remember hearing a podcast early on when I was thinking about, you know, how am I going to create something entrepreneurial? I knew I wanted to own my own business. And I heard this podcast that talked about branding yourself. And I'm like, it like struck me wrong. I'm like, ooh, I like branding myself. But I actually sat down and thought, how do I want to present myself? Who do I want to be? And I remember the first time I made a video, I looked robotic and I looked like a deer in the headlights and I wasn't smiling and my voice was monotone. And I started smiling and I remember my face hurting afterwards. And now I just show up with a smile and it's transformed who I am as a person. Like it has helped eradicate depression that I had dealt with because I crafted who Lori Hammond was going to be in this business. And I even decided that I wasn't going to curse on camera. I actually curse like a pirate in real life. From time to time, it's actually curbed because as professional Lori and personal Lori have calibrated and become more of the same person. Yeah. And part of the reason I did that is because I wanted to reach a wider audience and because there are other people out there who will drop the, you know, the four letter words. And I thought other people are already doing that. And I'm already using some of their techniques in really cool ways. I don't need to copycat the way they show up as a professional as well. So I think that setting an intention about how you want to show up can be really valuable. And I know like my Facebook page reflects that. My social media accounts reflect that. I think that it's really important to present yourself the way people are, people by people. I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even one step further with brand yourself, you know, I always tell my students, you are your brand.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not even branding yourself, really. It's about putting you out there as the brand. So you're, you know, and you can't help but just be yourself with that, isn't it? You know, and that brand can change as we change as well. You know, we're not kind of stuck in the, you know, whatever it might be. You know, we as we flourish and grow and develop as people, that's how our brand develops, isn't it? You know, so
absolutely. And me bringing people talking about sex onto my podcast is me growing my brand and like stepping a little bit out of the extremely G-rated into at least PG, maybe even PG-13. It's so good for me. I love that we can always be evolving. Kaz, the next thing you mentioned was that complete whim, kind of just acting on a hunch or maybe an intuition. Will you talk to me a little bit more about the importance of doing that?
Oh, well, that's something that I've been on a real personal journey with. You know, my background, I studied biology at university. So I am quite a science, or was quite a science-based person. And, you know, what I've learned through 20 years now of seeing clients in my office is that we have to trust our gut sometimes, and the whim, that feeling, that compulsion, or that compelling kind of sensation to do or say something, or to be somewhere, or to contact somebody, usually holds quite a lot of vitality, if you like. So, you know, I've learned to do that. I kind of combine the two now. So, you know, we can use all three of our brains, our actual brain, our heart, and our gut. But it's and some of the best things that I've seen with my clients, and some of the best things that I have experienced for myself, have purely been on a whim. And, you know, really was when I kind of made that journey over to Las Vegas, complete, you know, I said to my husband, you know, after obviously being at home for quite a long time and not traveling, after being a very traveling kind of person with my previous job, was kind of like, well, honey, in August, I'm going to fly to Las Vegas by myself, and I'm going to go to this conference. And he's so used to me being like that, he was like, okay, off you go. And if that's what you feel you need to do, I suspect great things will come of it. And, you know, sometimes he has more faith in me that way, in my whims, than sometimes I do. You know, it's like, just run with it. I'm writing this book. He's like, just run with it. It'll be great. You know, it's that kind of, yeah.
That is so awesome that you have a partner that supports you. That makes me so happy. And you said your kids are teens. How many kids do you have?
I have two boys. They're 14 and 17. So, okay.
Sounds like an adventure.
it certainly is, especially in our current times. Absolutely.
And then the final thing that I would love to spotlight that you just mentioned was that it never occurred to you that you couldn't. So you're setting up this business. It's kind of like you have to make it work, and you just made it work. So will you talk a little bit more about getting in the mindset of moving forward?
Okay. Well, I think I was lucky in that when I set up my hypnosis business, Facebook and social media kind of really weren't a thing. And I've always been the kind of person that I will decide something and then I'll go do it. You know, again, my husband jokes, you know, if I've decided something, then it's probably going to happen. So if I start talking about doing great big things in our house, he starts to get really worried, because he knows probably it will happen somewhere along the line. But I think that was it. I've just kind of had that mindset. And I actually think that probably comes from being dyslexic, where I wasn't diagnosed as being dyslexic until actually I'd finished university. So I went through the whole of my schooling without that. And basically I got used to working so hard to get a similar result to what everybody else seemed to find easy, that I just kind of got to a point where I knew if I worked hard enough, I would always get there. And I was used to working super hard to get there. So when it came to hypnosis, and hypnosis came really easy to me, I don't know, it feels right. It kind of comes from somewhere inside of me. And yes, I've got lots of and had lots of training, and I've practiced and practiced and practiced. But I think because I was so used to doing that, because of being dyslexic, as in having to work so hard, that I'm just used to working hard, and it never occurred to me that I would never get there. So, you know, this is why I say being dyslexic actually is a real gift, because it teaches that lesson when you're relatively young. So it truly didn't occur to me that I would not get where I wanted to be. It just didn't occur to me. If you work hard enough, you'll get there. That was kind of the principle that I was, and I guess because I finally found my thing, you know, and when we find our thing, the thing that we can be good at, or we can excel at, or we just get it. And I'm not, you know, again, working through, you know, school, it took so long for me to get it. Here was this thing I just suddenly got, applied with that kind of just that habit, if you like, of just pouring everything into it. And here we are, this is the result, which, you know, I am proud of. You know, I'm proud of the things that I've achieved with my business.
I love that. For a person who's listening, who maybe doesn't feel like they have that drive and they have that ability to work hard, I believe that often it's just a matter of cultivating something that is inside of us, but perhaps underutilized. And I think you and I, you know, being a little bit versed in NLP or a lot versed in NLP, I'm not sure where you are, it's all about modeling. So could you maybe even take us back to elementary school Kaz, who's trying to over, you know, learn to read and not understanding why it's such a struggle, just unlock for us some of the mindsets that help a person step into that tenacity and that relentlessness that allows them to move forward. I know that's a big question, but I'm intrigued.
It is. I mean, there's many kind of people that I've modeled and didn't realize that I had. And, you know, we're kind of, when we see people that are, and people in our lives that, you know, have overcome great adversity and have done something great. And even when we're younger, we don't realize that's what they did. I think they just kind of carry that vibe and that kind of aura about them of being very determined and resilient kind of people. And I guess for me, I'm lucky in that the biggest one for me is actually my own mother. And, you know, bless her, had a very difficult upbringing and had a lot of kind of issues through her life. But she took herself from a place where people told her she couldn't be the things that she wanted to be, that women really should kind of be at home and look after the kids and didn't really have much value. And she actually put herself through nursing school and became a nurse. And, you know, it's only with hindsight that I know this story. You know, when you're little, you don't know all these things. But she and my grandfather is another one. He was somebody that just constantly told me, you can be anything that you want to be. And, you know, you just accept the things that people tell you. So it's that at times it was frustrating. And like I've already said, I did end up at a point when I was at university in therapy because I didn't have self-esteem and I felt quite worthless. I felt stupid, you know, like I must be unintelligent and, you know, all of the things that, you know, that commonly people kind of associate with that kind of thing. But we get to that point and then we move past it, don't we? You know, so there's all kinds of things that we can do, but I guess it's that ultimately it's about self-belief. And if I was going to say to anybody, how do you build a successful business? Yes, there's all the things that we do. You know, we need to learn the kind of mechanics and the ins and the outs. But I always say, go and talk to people that have self-belief. And the other thing you should do is find people that will believe in you when you don't believe in yourself.
Thank you so much. This has just been absolutely amazing. For people listening, what is a great next step? You know, perhaps for a woman who has been struggling with that shame and wants to break through, how would someone get a hold of you? I'm assuming that you work over Zoom. Or perhaps are there any recommendations that you would give someone who wants to start down that path? Perhaps, I know I love reading books. Are there any books that you would recommend, or what's a good next step?
Oh, wow. There's so many different kind of resources. So anybody that wants to contact me either for training in this field or for sessions, you know, two thirds of my clients are online clients from all over the world. You know, the other third are in the UK still. And they can do that at sexualfreedomhypnosis.org for training.com for client sessions. There's also kazriley.com, which is kind of my more general kind of hypnosis website. There is a whole multitude of books that people can look. There's anything by Esther Perel, there's people like Naomi Wolf, but there's lots of other stuff as well. You know, all the cool stuff, you know, about self-esteem and all that kind of, this is where my dyslexia kicks in, where I know I've read all these books and I can't remember the names.
I did the same thing. I totally put you on the spot.
But I can certainly put a list together and kind of give you some recommendations. But there, I mean, there is just a wealth of information out there. And I guess anybody that's thinking, actually, I'd like to experience this kind of sensuality or I'd like to be more in touch with my sexual self. The first step of that is giving yourself permission to explore that. And, you know, I'm a big big fan of giving ourselves permission for things. And because we often don't, you know, we often, it's this fear of what other people think, you know. And, you know, going back to your question about confidence, I think where my confidence comes from, and I'm not always confident, nobody is, we all have our days that we're not, was simply because I saw so many people over the years that came into my office that feared what other people think, was that I realized that nobody was thinking anything about me other than what I was thinking about them. And once I accepted that, wholeheartedly accept that, you know, in the kind of the words of Brené Brown, that's where that confidence comes from. So if you let go of that fear and you give yourself permission, then you start that journey for anything, actually, not just sexual freedom, but just freedom in general. And I think that's really important.
That's so beautiful. Kaz, you have given me such a gift, and I know that my audience will feel the same way. I am incredibly grateful to have connected with you. I wish we would have done this sooner, but this is exactly the perfect timing. I wish you the very best. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
It's been an absolute honor, Laurie. Thank you for having me.
I'm so grateful you've listened all the way to the end. What is one tiny action step you'll take now based on an aha moment you got during the podcast? Maybe that life-changing action step is to come accept the gift I have for you at theimpostermonster.com. Head there right now to get your powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room. That lets you make important decisions and get crystal clear about your next step forward on this path of purpose in your one great and precious life.